This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Joining us on the line at this point is Stephen Houck. He was previously the chief of the Antitrust Bureau in New York State Attorney General's office, and he served as lead trial counsel for New York during the Microsoft antitrust litigation. Why is this important? There seems to be a big move by the Department of Justice in moving forward with antitrust hearings and potentially some litigation targeting tech companies such as Google, Facebook, Amazon, and so forth. What does this mean, and where will it lead? Mr. Stephen Houck, thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
So, for the benefit of the listening audience, we all hear about antitrust. Actually, because I'm a lawyer, I actually know a little bit about it, but a lot of folks have no idea what it actually means. If you could just give us a brief background to get this conversation started.
Yeah, so sure. As Supreme Court has said, the antitrust laws are the Magna Carta of our free enterprise system. It's not really regulatory, but they set the basic rules for competition. And the idea is to assure fair competition, to incentivize innovation so that our economy is productive and is helpful to consumers. And one of the main points is for government agencies to try to help consumers. Private companies can bring their own lawsuits if they believe that there's been a violation of the law. They can get treble damages. So the government really stands in for the consumer and tries to make these laws work for the consumer's benefit.
So when we think about that, I mean, the original Sherman Antitrust Act that I guess was the seminal act as it relates to antitrust goes all the way back to 1890. So this is not some new legislative or judicial declaration, right?
Correct. That's very true.
So when we think about this in relation to tech companies, and as I was reading a number of articles in preparation for this morning's interview, it seems to me that there is a lot of friction because, you know, when you think about capitalistic tendencies and you're running a company, you want to create as many profit centers as possible that may be not your core business, but on the edges of your business. And you want to be involved in that because, you know, the more that you can control, the more likely that you will be successful. But yet, it seems as though that there's this friction that may not be so good for the consumer, and then consumers as well as the government steps in to try and limit that.
Right. I guess that's true to a certain extent. Our economy obviously is much different now than it was in the 1890s. Right. And so it is true that companies are bigger, but it's not unlawful for companies to be big and or successful. It's when they do things that try to unfairly restrict competition, which is at the point where the government becomes concerned about what they're doing. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess the point that I was trying to make is that human nature is you typically do things in your own best self-interest, right?
True.
And therein lies some of that friction that I was talking about. When you kind of, if I have a company that's kind of on the edges of my core mission and I go out and I purchase that company and I want to make sure that I send as much business from my core business to that company in order to ensure the likelihood of its success.
Yes.
Sometimes that can run afoul of what we're talking about relative to antitrust.
Yeah, it depends on the circumstances. The antitrust law itself is very general. As you point out, it's really been developed by the courts over the last 150 years or whatever, since 1890. not sure I can do arithmetic in my head that fast. But so, you know, a bunch of court decisions that sort of lay out what companies can and can't do. And it's very dependent on the facts of each individual case, which is, you know, one of the things I find interesting about it, but it makes it somewhat hard to understand, I think.
One of the things that kind of confuses me is that we seem to, when I was reading through a number of articles, we seem to lump like the tech industry all together.
Right.
And as you know, and I know, these individual companies, whether it be Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, whatever,
right,
they've all proceeded on their own unique and individual timeline. Yes, they engaged in mergers and acquisitions along that timeline. They've grown their business model. And what I had a real difficult time getting my head around is that it would seem to me that antitrust is a very individualistic scope. I mean, there are certain things that you do or you didn't do. And, you know, lumping all of this together just seems to be an issue for me. Why would they approach it that way?
Well, yeah, I completely agree with you. And actually, you made my point better than I did. I was saying it's very fact-based. Whether a company violates law doesn't depend on the size, but what it is that they do. So each of these companies really, there is some competition between them in certain areas. But as you point out, they have their own unique businesses. And it is true, as companies get bigger, the government looks more closely at what they're doing. There's sort of been this, and I agree with you, there's been this sort of general ferment against big tech. And it's not always clear to me why that is. I think a lot of it, you know, comes from policy, at least in Washington, rather than from consumers. These companies are big and successful because consumers like their products. And for the most part, they're inexpensive or cheap or free. And that, you know, for example, it certainly wasn't the case with Microsoft. So there, you know, Microsoft was really making monopoly profits based on its sale of Windows, which was quite expensive. You contrast that with some of these products like Google makes, search, which is free. And so, you know, consumers like it. And then Microsoft was doing various things that the court eventually found was illegal. They were, you know, coercing people not to use other products. They were making it impossible for people to switch products, or very difficult. And that's kind of in contrast to Google, for example. You know, I have an Android device, Samsung Android device, which runs on Google's operating system, Android. And there, actually, you can go to the Google store and download competing search engines, competing browsers, and it's just the reverse of Microsoft. Microsoft is trying to prevent all that. So I completely agree. I mean, it is puzzling to me. It's puzzling to you. It's puzzling to me.
Is this more a battle between politics versus business practices? Because as I read through this and reading between the lines, it seems to me that the donor direction, political ideology, maybe the possibility of suppression of speech, which is what some of the folks are complaining about, that there's this hodgepodge of really political issues as opposed to business practice issues. And it gets back to, well, if I have a company, I control a company, and I want to be aligned with a certain ideology, why am I not free to align with that ideology?
Yeah, you're pretty sharp. I mean, that's actually what I think. I'm a little bit loath to express my opinions. I'm really an antitrust lawyer and a litigator. But, yeah, looking at it from 10,000 feet, I completely agree with you. So when you have Democrats who tend to be, sort of very ideological, anytime somebody has a big market share, they're concerned. It doesn't really matter to them as much what the practices are. It's the possession of, large markets, which may have been gotten because the companies, do a good job serving consumers. So that's what they're concerned about. Republicans seem to be concerned about what they believe is censorship of, people on the right. And so I have a lot of difficulty understanding that. for a variety of reasons. You know, I use Google News and on there all the time. They're, you know, quoting Fox and Wall Street Journal and the New York Post here in New York City, which is conservative. So yeah, I agree. A lot of it's politics. I don't think it is business.
Would it be safe to say, or do you believe this? Because as I was looking at it, it seems to me that kind of Facebook has pulled all of these into this same sphere because of the speech issue. It seems to have occurred, or the allegations are that it's occurred in their forum more than the others, and the others are just victims of maybe Facebook's success in many respects, or like they're, I'm not sure, but it seems that all of this comes back to Facebook.
Well, you don't need me on your show. I mean, I pretty much agree with your analysis. You know, a lot of it has to do with the last election, and you know, Facebook, I think, is in a very difficult position. You know, do you censor speech, you know, may be inappropriate for some reason or not? And if you do, you open yourself up to criticism about how you do it. So they're in a difficult position, and I think a lot of the criticism, you know, results from the last election cycle. So I agree with you. I'm sorry, I keep agreeing with you. I need to.
No, it's okay. I mean, I try to educate myself as much as I can on these issues before I do these interviews, and things just kind of strike me. Yep. You know, because I looked at acquisitions made by every one of these companies, and I looked at the company, you know, what the company execs were saying at the point in time that they agreed to these acquisitions. They agreed to sell their business to whether it was Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, or others.
Yeah.
And they all talk about the fact that capitalization was going to be a problem for them, and they feared bigger companies, any of them, you know, that had the capital getting into their sphere.
Yeah.
And they all refer to basically what they're saying is timing is everything. We have a product. We grew it to the best, to the highest capacity that we could with our capital constraints that we had at this point in time. But to get to the next level, we recognize or realize that we're going to end up selling this business off. And then the purchasing company... has an idea that they can actually grow this business. They're not sure, but they know it can help and facilitate their core business, so they buy it. And in some cases, it fails. And in other cases, it takes off and it makes them billions. In some cases, far greater than they ever expected. And I'm not sure how the government gets in and evaluates these things, because in this tech industry, market conditions change so fast. You know, what we're talking about today is probably antiquated tomorrow.
Yes.
And I'm not sure whether this can even be effective in the typical way that the government approaches a lot of these investigations.
Yeah, again, I'm compelled to agree with you. So, you know, a lot of these software companies are, you know, they're relatively small companies. So it can be like 10 to 15 guys or gals. I need to be politically correct here. We've got the women who have a great idea. And they take to a certain point, and then, you know, they really capitalize on it, they have to sell it to a larger company. They want to sell it to a larger company. So it's not like, you know, Exxon acquiring Mobil. These are pretty small companies. And the government actually does look at these mergers at the time they occur. A lot of these are, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And they, you know, try to determine, it's very difficult, you know, based on the future, is this likely going to be anti-competitive or not? And, you know, case in point is some people complained about there's a company called DoubleClick that Google acquired, I think, in 2007. And the government took a look at it and said, you know, the FTC, we don't see any competition problem. And then, you know, so Google acquires it, and then they develop the software, and it becomes an important part of the company. And now people, after the fact, look back and say, well, maybe you shouldn't have done that. But, you know, there was nothing wrong with it at the time, and it's successful in large part because of what Google did with the company after it acquired it. So to my way of thinking, it may be very unfair, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, to say, you know, you have to sell that. It doesn't even exist anymore as a separate company. So I'm not sure even that's possible. But yeah, I completely agree with you. It's a difficult area where the government has to sort of look into the future and prognosticate. It's just sort of part of the normal cycle.
You know, the interesting thing, you bring up DoubleClick. I mean, actually, I believe that company auctioned their company off. They gave three or four different companies an opportunity to bid on the company. A lot of it had to do with, I guess, legacy royalties or something. I forgot the terminology that they used. But in that particular case, and they looked at some of the internal business practices of these companies, because, ironically, when it went to auction, the upfront payments were almost identical. The valuation that had been done by these three or four different respective companies valued it, you know, within dollars of one another. So there wasn't any really, you know, difference there. So it came down to culture and their legacy in many respects, from what I could glean from what the owners of that company were saying. And now the federal government is saying, I found a bunch of quotes from the FTC members at the time saying, no problem, no big deal. Now, all of a sudden, because it's as successful as it is, and there may be a question that Google is promoting its own products more so than others in some of the advertising deals and everything that goes along with it. But that's the point that I was saying, is why is it so difficult to be able to self-promote yourself when you're in an expansionary mode?
I don't think it should be. I mean, that's what companies want to do. They have a great idea, and they take it as far as they can take it, and then they want to sell it for the most money they can, or to give it to the company where it's going to do the most good to them or to the public. And so they should be free to do that, unless there really is a serious concern, as you point out. The FTC and others have looked at all these mergers in the past and said they're okay. So to me, an analogy that comes to mind is if you're a house owner and you go to the zoning board in your neighborhood and say, can I put another story on my house? And they say yes. And then, 15 years later, there's a different zoning board and somebody comes by and says, well, I don't like the way that looks. You've got to tear it off the top of your house. I mean, it's similar to that. It's just sort of unfair.
Right. Or worse yet, you've inflated the cost of the your houses on your block per square foot, and they're having to pay more in property taxes, and that wasn't fair to them. You may be able to afford it, but they can't.
That's true, too. You know, I'm thinking if you want to stop your very successful radio career, you could become an antitrust lawyer. You'd think like one.
Well, it just kind of strikes me. I mean, I'm one of those, I say this all the time, I want more millionaires. I want more successful people, because I ultimately believe that the tide is going to rise and it'll find its state of equilibrium at some point in time. Yep. And to get super intrusive in these capitalistic tendencies or something that just kind of runs contrary to my thinking, here, because people... We always forget about this adjacent thing, and it begins with an R, and we downplay it all the time, is risk. For every successful company, there's 100 that were not. But we don't ever focus on those, because obviously that's not influencing the market so much. But the fact of the matter is that's the equalizing factor, and that's what creates the equilibrium, I think, in many respects.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, one of the fundamental purposes of the antitrust law is to encourage risk and encourage innovation. And I'll give you a quote from a famous judge, Leonard Hand. This is from a big antitrust case called Alcoa. And he said, the successful competitor, having been urged to compete, must not be turned upon when he wins. I mean, that's really the essence of the antitrust laws. Encourage people to take risks and develop new products and, help consumers in that way.
Well, it sounds like the government's about to make a decision in the very short term as to what they're ultimately going to do. Your prediction?
Well, all signals are that they're going to bring a lawsuit, the DOJ, either this week or next week, against Google, at least initially, and then maybe some other companies as well.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'd love to have you back on once that's done to talk about this, because it's going to be interesting to me to see what it is that they actually cherry pick out of their business practices that they believe that you know, qualifies as being anti-competitive, or, you know, as David Cicilline says, he's one of the leading Democrats on the committee that says all of these companies are monopolies.
Yes.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what evidence they're able to bring forward to suggest that. Obviously, they're all big. Obviously, they're very successful. But they happen to be, in many cases, first to market. And I'm not sure.
Yes.
I'm not sure why are you going to be punished for doing that? But
I feel like I'm a choir guy. I keep agreeing with you.
Well, I apologize.
I'm happy to your program. So I'm happy to come back on. By the way.
But, Stephen Houck, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk more about this, because I think a lot of folks, started reading about this a while back and kind of am struck by it, because it just runs contrary to, I guess, what I learned in business school. But be that as it may, 504-260.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. Truly appreciate it. 260-1870 on the Mortgage Financial phone and text line. We will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.